Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast, the podcast in which Stephen El Trogi, Barnabas Piper, and Ted Kluck cheerfully rant about all the things that don't matter all that much. And now, buckle up for today's episode.
Hey, welcome to a new era of the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined by Barnabas Piper, and the newest member of our trinity, of our triumvirates, one Ronnie J. Martin. Big R, how are you, baby?
Hey, I'm good. That whole trinity comment got me a little uncomfortable, but I'm going to roll with it.
You know what? I wanted to put you on edge right away, man, because that was kind of the role that Steven played. He was sort of the antagonist here in the group.
Sort of the pseudo-heretic,
but that's probably the most edgy thing that will come out of my mouth all day.
Yeah, no, that's rough, man. We should probably do a do-over on that one, you know?
Dude, it's a little tough to start over, isn't it? You know what this feels like a little bit? Have you seen This Is Spinal Tap, Big R?
You know, I feel like to even ask me that verges on me needing to hang up and you guys finding another host almost.
I know, baby. I'm sorry. But you know what? I feel like Derek Smalls when he goes out to do Jazz Odyssey for the first time. You know? Just a kind of a free-form jazz exploration. That's what this program feels like to me.
Because I think that's what it is. Absolutely.
I think that's what it is, too. I'm really excited to have you on. Ronnie, of course, comes from a music background, comes to us from many years in the music industry, and now his years in pastoral ministry as well. So we are stoked to have Ronnie on board. Also, stoked to have Lemon Street Mobile on board for another couple weeks as a sponsor. I feel like we're just getting to know them, Barnabas, you know, and soon we're going to have to say goodbye. But why don't you tell the listeners about Lem Street?
Yeah, it's one of the sad things about how relationships work. You get to know somebody and then they love you and leave you. So,
dude, you know, you share, you get vulnerable, and then they go.
And then they break your heart. But that's not a positive way to talk about our sponsor, so we should probably move on from that. No, Lemon Street Mobile is a small business based out of Pennsylvania, started by a guy named Brian, who is a really, really good guy, also a really, really good phone repairman. So what he is doing is taking his small local business and offering services nationally now. And so our goal is to help him spread the word about it. You can go to lemstreet.com to find out all about their services. Their main things are a protection plan for phones and trade-in services. The deal that you get for being a Happy Rant listener is a 10% discount off of their already really, really good prices. So if you go through, you sign up for your protection plan or you do a trade-in, you will get a 10% discount if you use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout. And just a quick word on their pricing, it's a $69 deductible per transaction. Your average one that you get through a phone service is about $200. So it's way, way cheaper than that. And then it's $5 a month instead of the standard sort of $10 a month through the other one. So his prices are already great. You get 10% off of that. Go to lemstreet.com, use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout. You'll be supporting a small business by a great Christian guy who does really good work. So check that out.
Outstanding, baby. Thanks for that. Ronnie, you just got back from a conference, did you not?
Yeah, I did. A little Sojourn Network conference. They call it an intensive. It's a three-day sort of thing where all the pastors get together, and it's just nonstop for about 3 days.
What makes it intensive as opposed to seminar, conference, colloquium? Like, what are we looking at here?
So that's a good question. So they like to inform us that the reason why they give it the word intensive to describe it is because they're not giving us a lot of breaks. So you start in the morning with main sessions, you go to breakouts, main sessions, more breakouts. They don't let you out of the cage until dinner time, so it's just nonstop.
So when do you get your cigar breaks? Because I know that's what pastors' conferences are all about.
You know, I mean, yeah, well, and if you're talking about Sojourn Network, you're talking about bourbon and cigars, of which I
bourbon and cigars,
unfortunately. So I'm a little on the outs.
I'm not allowed to know anything about bourbon. I'm Baptist.
I forgot about that.
That's all right. I'm offended by the word itself. So just this is you were offended by being called a member of the Trinity. I'm offended by the word bourbon. We'll just have to offend Ted now and complete the triumvirate.
Yeah, TK, you're off to a great start, man.
I think I'm offended by the flavor, which is sort of like paint thinner. But I think you guys are striking at something, which is sort of the 30-something kind of white Christian male sort of. It's incumbent upon us to pretend like we like bourbon and cigars and finer things.
Oh, absolutely.
And baby, did you see a lot of beards and shaven heads?
There was a lot of beards. There was a lot of plaid shirts. There was a lot of very tight fitting jeans and very expensive Red Wing shoes. Or if you were me, H&M knockoffs.
Dude, the so, Red Wings. Baby, remember the times we used to have at H&M?
Oh,
back when we used to travel the Midwest with our old program.
Yes, I know. Those were some glory years.
I'm feeling left out.
As in the 9 months that we did the program. Yes.
Remember when we used to shop at H&M with Barnabas, too? And he would, forever to try things on.
Let's revise history. But those tight jeans, they were really nice. I liked those.
Outstanding.
But quick question, Ronnie. Were all of the plaid shirts buttoned to the very top button?
Well, you know, there's kind of a weird sort of Miami Vice trend going on.
Oh,
with
so they're unbuttoned down to the, like, just above the navel.
Down to the navel.
It is, yeah. It's sort of like we wear a little bit of like a wife beater underneath the plaid and unbutton it now. So it's getting really loose. It's getting really, really, really I think uncomfortable now.
Dude, because I want to see the top of my pastor's chest, man. I mean, that's kind of a...
Absolutely.
I'm not sure which is better, the Mexican gangbanger look or the Miami Vice look. Like, that's neither one strikes me as a real pastoral look.
Well, somehow they've combined the two, and I'm not going to lie to you, boys. I'm thinking a move to A29 might be imminent now.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
Baby, is A29 any better though? I envision a lot of the same over there.
Yeah, except for it's just a lot bigger and a lot less bourbon. So we'll see what happens.
There's a bit more of a variety over in X29 too, because they've been around a little longer, so they've attracted some of the more run of the mill polo shirts and jeans guys, and
absolutely,
there's still some of the Affliction T-shirt crowd, and
there's a combo. I think Maddie Chan kind of brought in the polo and jeans crowd, and
Maddie Chan brought in like the Southern frat guy crowd.
Yeah,
there
it is, the Nautica crowd.
The Nautica crowd, exactly. Yes. Now, baby, there's a kind of unique unique kind of musical trend among this people group, the sort of the 30-something affluent white guy group. And Barnabas actually brought this up. We're doing all listener-submitted questions today, except this one from Barnabas. And it is, why does this particular demographic feel the need to listen to, like, whiny, mopey, like sad guy music, like Ryan Adams and Radiohead, and you being our resident music expert, man, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, man. I mean, part of it is just they're really big on bringing back the old school liturgy, and they're really set on kind of bringing out sort of this idea of singing songs of lament and confession. And so I think it kind of goes in line with this whole idea that we can, we're reformed guys, so we're naturally going to have a high sort of, sort of aim of seeing our sin for what it is and talking about it quite a bit and singing about it even more. And I think that kind of music and those kind of bands sort of, help, cultivate and facilitate that mindset, a little bit better for sure.
Now, Barnabas, that's a much more thoughtful answer than I think either of us envisioned. I think you were just hoping to kind of complain about Ryan Adams again.
I was hoping to take shots at the people who criticized me for not liking Ryan Adams. That's really what I was going for here. But here's the thing. So Ronnie is new to the podcast. This is a whole new dynamic here. We all need to kind of flex. It's like when Chris Bosh and LeBron James joined Dwayne Wade in Miami. They had to figure out, their first season was a little rough. They had to figure out how they all played off each other. But boy, when they played well together, did they look amazing. So
all these all-stars in one room.
Ted, he's talking about basketball right now.
Yes.
Ronnie, he's talking about basketball. It's this game with a leather ball that you throw through a hoop.
Oh, okay. So, the orange ball.
Yes, it's the orange one. Yes, exactly. And so this is, it's going to take us a little while to find our groove. So, listeners, bear with us. Ronnie has to learn that thoughtful only works in doses on this podcast. Mostly we're looking for insults and sarcasm.
Wow, Barney. I mean, I thought that was a dose, man. Let me repent.
No repenting.
Sing a song of lament right now and repent to you.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Could you play some minor chords on your guitar and whine into the microphone a little bit, and then
lean into that pain.
Yeah, and then possibly a Coldplay cover as well.
Now you just want me to sound like Al Trogi, and I'd like to break away from that. If possible.
No, I don't know. I just So several episodes ago, something about Ryan Adams came up. I don't even remember. It was after he had covered Taylor Swift's album.
Yes.
And I basically said, I've never heard this guy. And then I went and listened to about half of two songs because that was all I could stomach. Because he sounded
that's about
like
all a, I made it through as well.
He sounded like a whiny frat boy covering Bob Dylan in a bar, and it was I just didn't enjoy it. And the same goes for Radiohead. I've tried to listen to Radiohead before, and they give me a headache after about 2 minutes. And I am of the precise demographic that's supposed to like whiny white guy music. And for the most part, I don't enjoy it. And I feel like a bit of a musical outcast for not enjoying it. And I don't understand the pressure. Like, why can't I just listen to, I don't know, James Brown and Stevie Wonder and various other types of music that are not whiny white guy music?
B-Pipe, you enjoy whatever you want to listen to. Far be it from me to judge you. I don't even judge myself or my own musical taste.
So you have no guilty pleasures because there's just no guilt.
Oh, I don't care what I listen to. I don't apologize for anything I like or not. Yeah, who cares? Listen to whatever you want. It's music. There's enough of it to go around, man. So you keep listening to Stevie Wonder. You keep pretending you like the things you like, and all these Ryan Adams fans will continue to pretend to like what they like, and we'll all live happily ever after.
I love it, man. We'll all pretend together.
Does anybody actually like it, or do they just pretend?
You know, I think they like it because the context they're in requires them to not being allowed to listen to anything else that doesn't sort of live up to that sort of artistic, what they would say, excellence. I would totally disagree with that. So I would love to know what you listen to, though, B-Pipe. So lay it on us.
Well, I listen to a lot of music that people a lot older than me tend to like. So I like jazz. So I've been on an Oscar Peterson kick lately.
Yeah.
I like R&B. So like old school R&B, like the James Browns and the Otis Reddings and Stevie Wonder, which is not quite so old school. I like hip hop from like the 90s and early 2000s. The last 10, 12 years have not been as strong by my tastes. I'm loath to call a lot of stuff crappy music except for Bro Country. That all sucks. I like country. I like the Alan Jackson kind of country, not the Luke Bryan fake country kind of stuff. So I'm kind of all over the map, but I feel like not a lot of music that's been made in the last like 10 years, except for I do like Mumford and Sons and I like the Lone Bellow. So I'm not totally untrendy.
Well, B-Pipe, here's what's ironic. The irony about every artist and band you just listed off would be like every sort of snobby, bearded, red wing wearing like white guy listening to mopey music would all list the band you listed in those genres, man. So you're just there. You just lack all the mopey white British guy stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you lack the ethos to go with it. Like you're not shaven head, bearded, you know, thick glasses guy. Like sort of being being that way about this music.
Maybe if I was physically capable of growing a beard, I would just inherently like this stuff more. But the fact that it looks like dirt on my face when I try to grow one, I think it just sort of it keeps me on the fringes of this subset of society.
You know what?
Yeah, you're just probably somebody that people would actually want to hang out with, Barnabas. So don't
yeah, you're not completely repellent and smug. So therefore, you're not really qualified to talk about this stuff.
Oh, good. I mean, I always feel out of place talking music because I don't keep up with any new music. I like old music. So I always come to everything about a year or two late. And so it's just I feel somewhat not inferior, but I feel judged often for my complete lack of interest in the Ryan Adamses of the world.
Well, and speaking of feeling judged, and speaking of kind of this whole, you know, red wing beard subculture that we've been speaking of, we had a listener throw us a great question, and it's this: like for a subculture, you know, kind of, you know, the reformed leaning evangelical kind of gospel coalition-y type crowd, the gospel type culture, for being so good at talking about and writing about and thinking about the gospel, why do we create kind of so much law in our day-to-day lives and church lives when grace is supposed to be the thing, right? When grace is supposed to be the thing that kind of drives all of it. And I don't know. I thought that was a really insightful question. And I don't know. I'm sure you guys have examples of what this looks like.
Well, I think it's especially interesting because so traditionally it's law versus gospel, sort of legalism versus grace, and so there's this whole sort of gospel centered everything movement, and gospel is an adjective and it's an adverb and it's a, you know, it's probably a brand of clothing too or something, and but when you get conferences like Together for the Gospel, but you define the gospel as 5-point Calvinism, for example, you have created a law that says precisely what the gospel is, and you've sort of you've ruled out a whole bunch of people, or you say you start calling gender issues a gospel issue. Well, now you've taken gender issues and turned them into a law that defines the gospel and all of these kinds of things. I mean, not to mention just the moralistic side of things, which still exists because a lot of these gospel-centered groups and people are pretty strict on a lot of things. So it's, I don't know, I just look at it and I'm like, if it's a gospel of grace, there sure are a lot of fences that have been built around it to keep a lot of people out, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Dude, for me it's the fact that, you know, if you go to one of these churches, and I have by my own choice for the last 15 years, and they've been wonderful. You know, they've been for the most part amazing churches, but I mean, I think just culturally right now, like, you know, in this subculture, church can't be a minute less than 2 hours. Like, if you're not sitting there for 2 hours, and if you're not standing for an hour of that, like, then you haven't really done church, you know? So it's sort of almost becoming this Puritan exercise in endurance every Sunday morning, you know? And then you add to that the hour-long evening service, and then I throw an hour of Sunday school onto the front end of it, man, and you got half a work day.
You're just describing Presbyterianism, T. I mean, come on, let's be honest, man.
I know, baby, but it's you know what I'm saying?
You come to my church, it's going to be $1.15. I mean, and
really,
that's
a $1.15, baby. Are you kidding me?
That's a long morning for us, $1.15.
And like 45 minutes of that is whiny white guy music, so the sermon part is really short. Nice.
We and sing for 20 minutes, bite. I preach for 40, we do a follow-up song, we eat, man. We keep it pretty stripped
down.
Do you
eat within
the
hour and 15? Is eating within the hour and 15, or is that
additional
time?
No, we have another 45 to eat. We probably spend more time eating than we do worshiping. But that, of course, is worship because
the food
is
gospel awesome.
Issue, buddy pipe.
That's right, because eating is
it's
a gospel,
gospel
issue.
Food.
So is eating too much. Gluttony, also a gospel issue.
Absolutely.
Which is something that pastors should probably pay more attention to. That's
look, here's the
issue.
Deal. So we create industries out of everything. So as soon as we can stamp gospel on something, and we can have conferences with the word gospel, which, by the way, I think is a return to some really good things. But at the same time, we've created an industry out of it. And whenever you create an industry out of it, it has to stay true to the things that are making it and maintaining what its original objectives were. And I think we're just seeing this sort of flesh out. I wonder where it's going to be in 15 years. I wonder our kids are going to grow up and they're just going to be like fully like Arminian, like that you guys got this gospel thing all wrong. This is
church
insanity.
Will be 45 minutes, you know, the sermon will be
once a month.
Minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's once a month. Right.
I mean, I'm literally just so fearful to see where your guys' kids are going to like go from this.
Your guys. Yes. Yeah. So do you have kids, Ronnie?
I have a 20-year-old, yes.
Okay, so you already know where your kids are going, and so fear is no longer a factor, or what?
Well, I don't know where my kid is going. It's just she's not a kid anymore, so I don't know where my adult is going. But
right,
your kids, yeah, the jury's out.
Our young children, we still have plenty of chances to screw them up.
Dude, our young children who have been in, like, you know, Reformed churches their entire lives and as a result have sat through just untold hours of church already because that's what you... Because
that's what they do.
Yeah,
I think it's really interesting what Ronnie said about the making an industry out of it. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, and you know, thinking about it from the business side of things, you have to remain true to your brand. You know, so what's your brand stand for? How are you presenting your products? Is this something they're going to buy? And then you have to think about, okay, who are we going to associate ourselves with? So if we invite this person in to represent our brand, is it off brand? And the same thing is true for conferences and blogs and whatever else. And you get somebody who's off brand, and all of a sudden, your audience is all up in arms because so-and-so's not reformed enough or so-and-so's too egalitarian. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms, but it does really seem like a business complex issue as much as anything.
Well, then what happens when the people, you know, what happens when some of the people ditch out on the brand or they have the, you know, obviously we're talking about the moral failures and those things happen and it kind of dilutes the brand a little bit. I guess my question for you boys is like, where do we, where do we see this naturally fleshing out? If we want to get a little prophetic, where do we see this fleshing out in 10 years?
Honestly, I thought the bubble would have burst by now. You know what I mean? I mean, I think by 2 or 3 years ago, I thought everybody who was going to go to one of these conferences would have gone. Everybody who was going to buy books in this space would have bought the books, and all the stuff would have been said. So, I mean, I thought we were going to see the sort of downturn by now. But what's crazy is there doesn't seem to be a downturn yet. You know, there's all these people still, you know, kind of identifying with the brand from a marketing standpoint.
It hadn't been around long enough for the audience to start dying off yet.
That's true.
I mean, there's no sort of natural attrition at this point. And the thing is, like, this particular flavor of audience. So if you look at something like, say, the Catalyst, this
dude, they're young.
Thing,
this flavor is young, man.
Yeah. So if you look at something like Catalyst, like it's leadership, and they've been around for 13 years, and they started with a bunch of people in like their late 20s who are now in their early 40s. Mm-hmm. And so they're just sort of aging with them, and the numbers are diminishing. They're not getting a lot of fresh blood, things like that, at least at the conference attendance. Mm-hmm. But you look at something like this gospel-centered crowd, and this is like the most fervent, pseudo-rabid crowd. And so they're not going to let go unless they just go crazy. And so,
well, dude, and the funny thing about that crowd is that you're never more convinced that you know everything than when you're young. And, you know, part of that subculture is sort of by definition about knowing everything. So,
there's some older representatives of that particular crowd who are pretty certain they know everything too.
True, for sure, man. But I think just from a sustaining the audience standpoint, yes. I mean, you've got these, you know, scores of kids just pouring into this thing every year who kind of really identify with that, you know?
Do you think there could be the possibility, let me just throw this out there, that we're actually creating sort of a new, I don't know if it would be, I don't even know what the word is, in the sense that, do you think in 50 years there's going to be a way to describe, you know, where you're at doctrinally or denominationally by not saying reformed anymore, but just saying gospel centered?
Dude, I think that's already almost in place, don't you, Barnabas?
In a subculture, yeah. Like if you function in the generally reformed world and you say gospel centered, everybody has a general sense of what you mean, and nobody has a specific sense of what you mean. Like nobody actually knows what that means, but we all know what camp you fall in. But if you say gospel centered in broader evangelicalism, you know, you go to a place where there's multiple denominations and things like that. It's a relatively meaningless term. It's a term that takes a lot of explanation because it's inside baseball talk in a sense. Like
it's just like the word evangelical. You have to, everybody kind of thinks, hey, we preach the Bible. How are we not gospel centered?
Yeah, exactly. Evangelical. Right. It's a term that everybody knows what it means and nobody knows what it means. And gospel centered is quickly approaching that. It's just that it's like the reformed version of that. And so maybe it's just replaced reformed because it's less, more easy to defend and less easy to criticize.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I meant. If we're going to sort of replace the reformed word or the, you know, describing yourself as, you know, Calvinistic, I wonder if it's just going to morph into that and it'll be something that's a little more palatable for people that have had such sort of a pushback against, you know, against reformdom, you know, for the past 100 years.
And I get that because I don't like the term Calvinist. You know, I mean, if somebody was to ask me if I was Calvinist, I would not answer the question with a definitive yes or no. But I'm not sure that saying I'm a gospel-centered Christian is any better. It just sounds really sanctimonious to me.
Nice.
Well, fellas, speaking of sanctimonious, let's talk about sports, shall we?
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Ronnie's driving this one, right? That's what I understood to be the case.
Ronnie's our sports guy, man. We're just going to let him riff because he loves that breadbasket of the Midwest, kind of Cleveland, Cincinnati ethos of
I just eat it up.
The local team just being everything, right?
I mean, if he could have one motto, it's probably 3 yards in a cloud of dust, right?
3 yards. He's a Woody Hayes guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Now, guys, maybe, that's all I can say. Somebody says Buckeye.
When local team plays on Saturday, do you put on the jersey and the old one bar helmet and cheer for local team?
Oh, absolutely. Just like it was back in the day with me and you, Big T.
Absolutely, man. Now, Barnabas, you may not know this, and this may be a little too uh, a little too too raw of a place to go on our first show together. But Ronnie is actually he's a sports movie aficionado.
Oh, really?
And, I didn't know this. I didn't know this until like a year or two into our friendship when we were, I don't know if we were traveling or we were doing some book thing together, and we were at a used record store that also sold DVDs, and I was flipping through these DVDs, and I ran across Rocky Balboa, which is like Rocky VI.
Yeah, you know? It's like the Rocky that nobody wants to admit exists.
Dude, right, it's Rocky VI, and I ran across it, and it was just a couple bucks, and I really wanted to buy it, but I had that moment of like the catch in my spirit where I'm like, man, if I buy this in front of Ronnie, he's probably going to think, you know, I have no taste or whatever. I should be buying like, you know, I don't know, The Bicycle Thief or whatever in front of this guy. But so I pick it up and I'm reading it, and he's like, dude, Rocky Balboa. He's like, you want to buy that? You want to watch it? And this started sort of the openness about sports movies. And it turns out Ronnie loves Any Given Sunday, Rocky Balboa. I think we watched Rocky Balboa together, didn't we, baby?
Absolutely, it was like a dream.
After that super promising publishing meeting that we took that went nowhere. Remember that?
how could I forget? Which one are you referring to?
Is there a statute of limitations on naming names of publishing companies and publishing groups at this point?
Dude, no. I have no compunction about that at all, man. No, it was Zondervan. And Big R was in town for a little while. I forget what for. You had spoken in one of my classes, or you came with me to class at Cornerstone.
Yes.
And this rep from Zondo was like, I really want to take you guys out to dinner. I think your writing voices are so fresh. You know, we really want to do a project together. So we went out to dinner, man. It was three of us. You know, me, Big R, and this rep. And the conversation was on point, man. We were witty. We were on. And it was that moment, Barnabas, where you get in the car and you drive home and you're just like, man, life is full of possibilities. You know, this could literally go anywhere. And of course, it went nowhere in that. I think we sent her some documents and some samples, and we literally never heard from her again. It was as though she had died. I hope she hasn't, actually.
Well, knowing Zondervan, she probably left the company or moved to a different position, and they failed to mention who the replacement was. They're a turnover machine,
at dinner that it was her last day at work. You know, that would have been a good thing to know.
Absolutely love to do a project with you guys, just not with Zondervan, because I won't be there any longer.
After I finish grad school, you know, in 6 years.
When my internship ends.
Yeah, when my internship ends.
Yeah. What you consider to be a Zondervan representative was actually their receptionist who was just auditing the class, and just didn't realize it.
She was auditing the class, and she'd somehow finagled her way into the company credit card for an evening. But anyway, where were we going with this?
We were going
into sports. Yeah. The fact that Big R is kind of a sneaky sports fan, I think, is the thing. And if you were to just, you know, search for him online and run across, you know, the Burgundy Years video or whatever, you wouldn't immediately know that this is a guy who, you know, who cares about sports films.
I care about sports movie films, you know, movie. That's what we're talking about.
Okay. Sports movie and fiction novels.
Right. And fiction story novels, yes.
Fiction story novels. The question from the reader was, why is it that sports teams, pro sports teams in particular, are so kind of averse to trying new things? So you see kind of year after year, the same offenses being run, the same, you know, kind of personnel being swapped around, the same coaches kind of getting recycled and getting jobs. And I feel like this is apropos, Barnabas, because our humble little program here, The Happy Rant, is going through a similar transition in that, you know, bringing on Ronnie might be akin to like, you know, Lindy Infante getting hired again, or like Joe Bugle, or, you know, one of these coaches who's been with another podcast just being grafted into ours.
That's true. We could have gone with the young, unproven sort of upstart coach with, you know, hired from the college ranks or something. And I guess we did precisely what this question is about. And we went to more of the proven commodity in the sense of, you know, having had some success in a similar kind of arena. We figured that was the way to go. And
he executes our system, you know, he's a system guy.
Yeah. And has the experience. So it's a relatively smooth transition. Not a lot of on the job training, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think the reader was getting at with this question, man?
I think it was, it just had to do with you know, every year in the NFL or really any sport, coaches or managers get fired. Mm-hmm. And they always get replaced by, well, not always. Most of the time, they get replaced by somebody who was mediocre elsewhere. So a recent example would be the Washington Nationals in baseball fired their manager 1 year after he won the National League Manager of the Year, by the way. So they fire him, and they bring in Dusty Baker, who was a mediocre manager with the Cubs.
Who's managed like every team in Major League Baseball over the past 20 years.
So he led the Cubs to the playoffs, but also killed the careers of Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood. he then managed the Reds to a thoroughly mediocre several years, and then went into to be a mediocre broadcaster, and now he's going to go be a mediocre manager and probably ruin Steven Strasburg's career as well. So why would they hire him and not somebody who's an upstart? Now, the NBA is better at this than other leagues. So you see, like this year, for example, two different teams brought in guys from college, proven college coaches, mm-hmm. but that's an uncommon thing. And so that's kind of cool to see. And then in the NFL, it's like statistics show that you should never punt if you're outside of your own like 30-yard line. Like if you never punt and you go for it on every fourth down, you will score something like 1.5 more points per game. If you always go for the two-point conversion instead of kicking the extra point, you'll score something like 0.5 point more per game. I mean, just all you have to do is do 50% or better on the two-point conversions, and you score more points. But nobody will do it. Nobody will make the change, and there's just sort of this risk aversion. And so I don't know. I think the listener was just trying to figure out why is there this whole sort of like – it's like a combination of old boys club and the complete aversion to trying anything new, even if statistics indicate that it would be a smart thing to do.
Dude, absolutely. And Big R, I feel like there's got to be some like music industry parallels here, man. And I guess I was
Certainly church parallels.
Yeah, definitely church parallels change happens kind of glacially. But I guess the band that came to mind was the Newsboys, which I think is like all the original members of DC Talk now. So in the same way that it happens in sports, I think it also happens in other industries. And I guess the message is that we're just averse to change.
We like formulas. I mean, if something works, we like to stick with it because ultimately it equates to success. And we're prone to not aligning ourselves with our fears, figuring out new ways to do things. And we're not really into progressing, are we? It kind of brings up the idea of progressive, movements within whether it's sports or music or any of those types of things. And there's a fear that we're not going to be liked, we're not going to succeed. And I think it just drives us. I think that fear just drives all of us in whatever realm we're in.
I agree. I think so many sports decisions, Barnabas, are made out of fear. You know, which is why. I'm excited to see Johnny Manziel get his one of his first significant starts tonight.
Yeah,
for the Browns. I mean, that feels like a step in a less kind of boring and traditional direction. But of course, if it fails miserably, then you and I will look bad yet again.
But here's the thing: even if it succeeds, as soon as McCown is healthy, he's going to be back as the starter because you can't take a risk and run with it. You only try it, and you go. I mean, it's like if a coach ever goes for the two-point conversion and it succeeds, it doesn't give them more confidence. It gives them a sense of relief that they didn't blow it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think what's interesting is that it doesn't even matter if these things work. In fact, it's fairly proven that if you hire a mediocre coach or manager, he's going to continue being a mediocre coach or manager. And yet teams keep doing it. And so it's more about comfort level than it is what will actually work. Are we comfortable stepping outside of this box? Nope. Well, we're just going to keep doing the same crappy job that we've been doing and hire somebody similar. And it's it's why Dusty Baker now has a managerial job. He's not the quintessential example of this, but he's just the most recent.
Absolutely. Guys, we're almost out of time, man. And I feel like if this were a television program, the thing that I would do now as a producer would be to cue up the kind of the sad, soft focus retrospective of Steven's career and his run with the show. And I mean, I was really struggling with how do we owe Steven some sort of verbal retrospective, man? So
It's like if somebody dies, you can't just not talk about them anymore.
I feel like we owe him a little bit of a eulogy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Even though he could be back in 3 weeks, and he probably will. But
that's right. We just so listeners know, Ronnie is on a week to week contract here. This is not. Yeah. We didn't sign him to like a big 3-year deal.
There's it's the NBA equivalent of like a 10-day.
I mean, he is our Johnny Manziel, and it's very possible that that Josh McCown being Stephen Eltrogi, and that's a very fitting.
That is such a fitting
right there.
Analogy. Right there.
Could be back within the next few weeks. Now, Ted and I have to play politics here and say that we would be thrilled in both instances.
Yeah, we
would
be. You know,
well, I don't really have a good comeback to that, B-Pipe.
Well, you're Johnny Manziel. You come out looking awesome. Johnny Manziel is somebody Ted and I both have great appreciation for. So
we're excited about the new direction.
So much affirmation right now. I feel like I can go anywhere.
but we really appreciate the past contributions of Josh McCown / Stephen Eltrogi.
I mean, I feel like maybe we should go around the circle and say one thing we appreciated about Steven's hosting tenure. I mean, he hosted 60 episodes of this.
Dude, was it that many episodes? That's unbelievable.
I know. It almost makes me want to retire.
Dude, my favorite Steven-related moment, and this might have been a Ronnie Martin episode, actually. There was one where I was opening my mail on the air. And then I walked outside to put another letter into the mailbox, and then I came back in, and there was all the noise. And Steven, yeah, especially in the early days of the show, he would get really mad at me on the air. He'd get like audibly upset and kind of harumphy.
Ted, what are you doing, Ted? What are you doing?
It sounds like a factory in there. You know.
Well, there was one time when you were probably recording close to your kitchen, and somebody was putting away pots and pans, and it was really
it sounded
loud.
Like a foundry. You know, it sounded like Bethlehem Steel.
That's right. Which Ronnie, being in the old Rust Belt area of the country, will understand, but most listeners won't. But no, I always appreciated the tension between you and Steven, which I don't think you found very tense, but he would get so what's the word? I think pissy is the right word about like when you would argue about editing changes and things like that.
Yeah.
And we've actually had listeners wonder where the tension went. And I don't know if that's a sign of us maturing or losing this key element of creative tension, but I always enjoyed listening to that because I never played any role in it whatsoever, and it was fascinating and really, really funny.
Yeah, Steven and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of that stuff, man, and I feel like that did provide some great energy on the program.
I know. We need to find some things that we don't see eye to eye on, which might be hard because I think you have a rather laissez-faire, I don't care attitude about things. Ronnie, being the relative new guy, is unlikely to come out throwing haymakers, although we encourage haymakers. That's fun.
You know, we got to give it a few more episodes. Let's be honest. I'll probably be off the program by then, but I think if we give it a few episodes. The one thing I liked about Eltrogi, I think it was one of the two times or three times I was on, was when you guys were hinting towards a person that I had figured out was no less than Rachel Held Evans. Oh. I think I said her name 7 or 8 times after I found out that he was saying, no, we can't say that name on
the
air. Dude,
yeah, we weren't allowed, man. We had a gag order on the program where we couldn't mention her by name. It was too painful.
So, but I think that kind of frees us up. If we want to talk about Rachel Held Evans, we can say Rachel Held Evans, and we can document some factoids about Rachel Held Evans. And if Rachel
Held
Evans,
so freeing.
We can also fabricate some of them as well, if need be. I mean, that's facts are, you know, never let facts get in the way of a good story. So I'd say, yeah, that's a good one. There was just certain things that he found very. He didn't want to go there. Which led for sort of a subtweet style of podcasting in some cases, where we would talk about very specific people in somewhat generalized ways, and we would all know who we were referring to, but nobody else would. And we got called out for it on more than one occasion by the person who knew we were talking about them, which is a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
I mean, one can only wonder what he's going to think when he listens to today's broadcast.
I think he will feel honored, you know? I think he will feel regretful, you know, a little tinge of regret. You know, it's sort of like
it's standing on the sidelines and watching somebody else play your position. It's
absolutely
not an easy thing.
You know, you're on a retirement tour, you get the rocking chair, you know, but you have to then watch your teammates, you know, going out there and making radio magic without you.
I mean, I feel Altrogi's going to just descend into the corner of his basement writing another verse for Behold Our God, which again will benefit what I do personally.
Yeah.
But I'm just afraid for his own sake. You know, I'm not going to be not going to lie to you on that one.
But, I mean, in all seriousness, we really do hope his rehab is going well. And they might not even let him have electronics in there. It's sort of a rubber room facility. So we do send our best wishes to him and to his family. We know this is a challenging time. We hope that the he kicks the addictions and that he can sort his way out of these gambling debts. And then that the rest of retirement for however long it lasts is just wonderful.
And B-Pipe, where can listeners send those well wishes and cards?
You can send them to happyrantpodcast@gmail.com. And we will make sure they are delivered with the weekly mail. They'll have to be read by the guards first, as is generally the case in these higher security facilities. But we'll make sure they get to him.
And you know what? If we get a hold of some of those, we've got some connections on the inside. We will read those on the air. So if you want to write a letter of support to Stephen Altrogi, send it to the aforementioned email address, and we will read it on the air. Guys, Barnabas, I don't even remember. What was Stephen's sign-off? It had something to do with to and far, to and fro, to and far.
He could not say we've wandered to and fro. He would always say to and far. And a number of listeners of the more grammarian ilk would tweet regularly at us asking him to correct that, which he either was incapable of doing or had no interest in doing.
Well, but what would he say after to and far, though? I feel like there was another sentence.
He was always peace the heck out.
Oh, yeah. I can't say that, man. I can't do that because I would never say that.
Well, no, that's absolutely that. Stealing somebody else's sign-off. I mean, that would be like doing a here's Johnny kind of thing. And like that's somebody else's catchphrase. So you got to have your own.
Today I'm going to end with – I'm going to say it correctly. So I'm going to say we've wandered to and fro. And then because I have the freedom and the space to do this now, I'm just going to close with the name Rachel Held Evans. All right?
All right.
So, folks, we've wandered to and fro. This has been the Happy Rant Podcast. Rachel Held Evans.
What do you do when your world is falling apart? How do you march when it would be easier to stay where you are and die? Join me every week on the March or Die podcast, and we'll discuss that and so much more.